Rod Whiting
on BBC Radio Lincolnshire.
Hello, skipper. Hello, navigator. Half a minute to go. Okay, thanks for my...
keep weaving, Tim. There's quite a lot of nice stuff coming up as well, falling off a bit low. Okay, keep weaving. Bomb doors open. Steady.
Hey, Jimmy, try to behind us, boy.
Bomb steady, bud.
Hurry up, Jimmy, hold him up. Where is he, rear gunner? Can you see him?
Down.
He's chopped down. Did you shoot him down?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's got him, boy. Right in the middle.
Bloody good.
Good, Jimmy, I can see him, boy. Good show.
In May of this year, I flew to Germany on a mission rather different to the one you've just heard. Air-conditioned flight, air hostess service, and a friendly welcome. By the end of my mission, a road trip of nearly 2,000 miles in just 5 days, I'd learned a great deal about another mission, one that took place 70 years ago in rather different circumstances. A mission involving a 6-hour flight at 100 feet in a noisy, shuddering Lancaster bomber pitched against a network of anti-aircraft batteries, night fighters and low-level hazards. A flight that for nearly half of the 133 crew members involved would be one way only. My mission was to follow the path of the Dambusters. It had started, much as Operation Chastise, in a hastily configured ops room at BBC Radio Lincolnshire a few weeks before. Project leader Michael Horton, producer Laura Jones and myself tapped away around the clock on computer keyboards amongst small piles of research notes, historic books and pin boards adorned with to-do lists, itineraries and a map of Germany and Holland. On the map were 8 small red pins, each representing the last moments of a Lancaster bomber and its 7 crew members. My job was to find those crash sites and bring the story of the aircraft and the men who flew in them to life. One of the tasks in those early weeks was to meet and capture the stories of those Bomber Command veterans still with us. I met up with a man called Geoffrey Whittle from Ruskington, a former navigator on 101 Squadron Lancasters based at Ludford Magna near Louth. I was in awe of Geoffrey as he recalled one particularly tricky operation over Hanover.
We were combed by searchlights, hit by a night fighter, aircraft on fire in the fuselage, and one engine gone. Pilot did a sharp drop down to port, fortunately put the fire out. We then think in terms of do we or do we not bail out. We stood by to bail out and then decided to that the aircraft was still flying on 3 engines, that we tried to get back. And we did get back. But at that time, yes, it was a bit hairy, but no, once we settled down and got sorted out, we bombed the target and came home.
When you say you got on and bombed the target, were you hit before or after you bombed
it? As we were getting close to it. Not exactly, not over the target, but as we were going in towards it, 2 or 3 minutes before, time to drop bombs.
You got hit by this fighter and you were aware of fire coming into the plane?
Oh, God, yes. One could hear the noise, plus the fact that the one of the hilarious incidents was the flight engineer. He went down to the fuselage and there he was with 1 foot on the floor of the fuselage and another foot on the ammunition tray, putting out a fire with 3 or 3 bullets going off all around him.
I'll never forget Geoffrey's mirth at the question, were you aware you'd been hit? What struck me about these anecdotes was the intensity of the memory, as if it had all happened last week. Meanwhile, preparations for my mission gathered pace. I studied satellite images of the dams and nearby terrain to try and get a sense of the scale of the task. Mernazay, Ada, Zorpa, just names on a map, much as it would have been for the crews when they were finally briefed on the day of Operation Chastise on May the 16th. But the maps, satellite images and photographs were nothing compared to standing on the spot where history was made. When the time finally came to fly out to Schiphol Airport, I had a packed itinerary. The hire car waiting for me at the airport would be fueled up no fewer than 8 times during the course of the next 5 days as I took on the Autobahn and charged up the sat-nav. The latter, though, would be no help in tracking down wartime crash sites. I needed historic records and local knowledge, and for that I'm indebted to people like Joseph Becker, Richard Sewling, and a very dear man by the name of Jim Shortland, my guide and mentor for the trip. My first broadcast from foreign soil concerned the last Dambuster crew to be shot down that night in May 1943. A. Apple, flown by Guy Gibson's great friend, Dingy Young.
Rod Whiting is following the trail blazed by the specially adapted Lancasters, and this morning is on the first stop of his journey, and you're in Holland, Rodders, aren't you?
Yes, good morning, Scott, from the sand dunes of Castricum aan Zee, around 30 minutes' drive to the northwest of Amsterdam. And as I look over the cream soda of surf washing up the beach here, I can see very little of the North Sea, actually. Low cloud and drizzle making visibility marginal. The beaches of Great Yarmouth are about an hour's flying time in a lank due west of my position. And away from the shore, I'm surrounded by these great sand dunes that would actually have been an issue for the Lancasters of 617 Squadron returning from their mission at the dams. They were flying so low over Holland that the bellies of the aircraft would have been virtually scraping the sand off the top of these dunes. So here's the thing, Scott. You're a bomber pilot, okay? You and your crew have got to deliver a new weapon weighing 4 tons, flying just above treetop height all the way from Lincolnshire to the heavily defended German industrial heartland. On approach to the target, you've got to drop to 60 feet, that's half the height of Boston Stump, at a precise speed of 220 miles an hour, and release the bomb at exactly the right distance, all while being fired at by 6 flak batteries. It was a big ask, especially as these crews had only had a few weeks to practice. And all this week, we're telling the story of how the seemingly impossible was made possible with a very British blend of ingenuity, flying skill and lion-hearted courage. And flying a Lancaster bomber on wartime operations was a dangerous enough task. Only around 1 in 4 aircrew made it past 30 operations. 19 bombers went out, 2 were forced to abort, only 9 of the remaining aircraft returned. And I start my journey with the first and the last Lancasters that didn't make it. Now later, I'll be at Vlieland, just up the coast to my right, where the first aircraft, K King, that was flown by Vernon Byers, was shot down as it crossed the Dutch coast in the early stages of the operation. But here at Castricum aan Zee, as I look right along the beach, I can see the point where squadron leader Henry Dingy Young, one of Guy Gibson's trusted deputies, wrestled with the controls of his Lancaster in vain as it crashed into the sea, downed by the very last flak gun before safety. So close. Well, standing with me on the beach is local man Jan van Dalen, who knows a little bit about A. Apple's last flight. Morning, Jan.
Morning.
Good to see you here. We hear the modern aircraft flying above on their way to Schiphol, but a very different scene 70 years ago.
Yes, when Melvin Dingy Young came back from Germany, he took the escape route number 3, the same route as Guy Gibson did. So Guy Gibson was more to the north. There was a flag, so-called flag cap. Dingy Young was a little bit more to the south, and so he came in reach of the Muiden guns. So he was hit by the guns about 2:57 a.m. in the morning, and he came down a minute later in the sea.
And the bodies were actually washed up over the following few days. Was there any chance they could have got out of that aircraft?
No,
were they
no.
trying to escape?
No chance to escape, because the story is that he tried to make an emergency landing on the sand, so it was impossible to come out.
And the people here, the local people, are they familiar with the story of the Dambusters and Henry Young?
The older local people, yes, because the wreckage of the Lancaster was until 1953, before the great storm on the beach. So, yeah, the older people, they must know about the crash here, yeah.
And the aircraft is still out there in front of us somewhere?
Piece of the wreckage is still there, more to the northwest, yeah.
Jan, thank you for talking to us this morning, Jan van Dalen. So how the crew of Eight Apples Hearts must have lifted as they saw the